Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Central Valley Sports Report. You found us on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Mitters, here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. Come on down here. Hey, the store's open from 10 to 4 today. I'm in the Letterman's Jacket room. Come on down here and get your Letterman's Jacket if you don't have it yet. This is definitely the place to be. If you need any type of sports equipment, they got you covered here at First String Sports. For the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking high school sports. A little bit of a different format, to be honest. So in the past, I've gone over scores, and I bring in Gabe, and then I have three guests. We've got a little bit of a different format today. The first hour is going to be Phil talking about high school sports and the incredible games that went on last night. And then the second hour, I am very excited. Actually, a little bit before 11 o'clock, I'm going to have Clovis West football, baseball legend, McKay Christensen. If you don't know who McKay Christensen is, well, I can't wait for you guys to hear his story. And just, not only an incredible athlete, but incredible guy. Part of the 1993 Clovis West 14-0 football team, scored 44 touchdowns, was NorCal Player of the Year. And then his draft stock in baseball started to rise, ended up being the number 6 overall pick in the MLB draft. Went on a 2-year Mormon mission. I don't want to spoil everything, but I eventually made it to the major leagues. And when the name McKay Christensen comes up around the Fresno and Clovis area, it's just gold, right? He's just so revered. So a full hour and a little bit more, about 8 more minutes, full of an interview with McKay Christensen. Can't wait for you guys to listen to that. After the break, we'll be talking with Gabe Camarillo about all the incredible games that went on last night. Oh, there's going to be so much to talk about. And then we have our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week here at First String Sports, Kingsburg's Trace Jackson. Got to watch him play last night. 1430 ESPN was able to broadcast their game against Washington Union. 39-15, I believe, was the final score. Me and Jose Gonzalez were on the call last night. What a great experience. Kingsburg has a phenomenal football team. They are 6-0. Trace Jackson is the number one running back on that team. Get to know him coming around 10:30 or so. He's our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week. Okay, so again, talking with Gabe Camarillo, Trace Jackson, McKay Christensen. Just an incredible show lined up for you guys. I'm going to go over a couple of scores before Gabe and I dive in a little bit deeper into some of these games. But, man, there were three standout games that ended pretty much on the last play of the game, high-level football games. We've got to talk about that Clovis West and Buchanan game. Gabe and I are going to be breaking that thing down. Just Andy Bogart, the longtime writer for the Fresno Bee, was there, and he was tweeting out updates, and he said it was an instant classic at La Monica Stadium. Clovis West beat Buchanan 29-22. Buchanan was the number one team going in on a lot of polls. Clovis West was around, I don't know, depending on where you look, the 2, 3, 4, even the 5 range, but Golden Eagles pulled it out pretty much on the last second. And then in another track game, Clovis East beat Clovis North at the final horn on a Hail Mary. They beat him 39-35. Actually, let me go back. I think I'm off. Yep, 39-35. And then in the Thursday game that we had on 1430, Central beat Clovis at La Monica Stadium 27-21. And then the other game I'm talking about that went into overtime, Hanford and Dinuba. Dinuba came back. They were up 16-0. Hanford tied it. Then Hanford was up like 30-22. Dinuba tied it, and then they won it in overtime. So what a great win for the Emperors to open up their new league. They haven't played Hanford in a long time. So, yeah, congrats to Coach CJ Lester in that one. All right. Enough talk with just me going solo here. We're going to be talking with Gabe Camarillo about all those great games and more coming up on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report. You found us on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Mitters. You can follow me on Twitter at PaulMeadors. You could also follow 1430 ESPN at 1430 ESPN. And follow Gabe Camarillo at Gabe Camarillo _. Gabe has his own show, Home Field Advantage, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5, does an incredible job up and down the Central section. Actually, we had a lot of fun on Thursday calling the Central and Clovis football game, but he does an incredible job. Also, does a lot of work for Fresno State. And, yeah, good thing we kept him here. I guess it wasn't in the budget for Barkboard to send Gabe all the way to UConn today for that game. But, yeah, I always enjoy talking with Gabe. So, Gabe, yeah, so it wasn't in the budget to fly you there?
Unfortunately not, but I'll be watching the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a fun and crazy and wild and wacky night last night in the Central Section Sports. We were calling the Kingsburg and Washington Union game and trying to keep up on Twitter during the game and giving updates on air, and we were following the game that you are at tightly. I guess you are at the Clovis West and Buchanan game in the fourth quarter, so you went at the perfect time, but instant classic. We were just, on pins and needles, waiting for the updates for you and to let everybody know what was going on. But what's the best way to describe, the atmosphere, the game, and just the pageantry and how the game ended?
It was an intense game, definitely. I when I walked up, you heard the chirping between both teams. Both teams wanted this one so bad for different reasons, right? Buchanan, they've been on the mountaintop for so long now. They've had challengers to their number one status, right? Buchanan was number one against Liberty. They beat Liberty. They were number one against Memorial. They beat Memorial. But those games were always close, right? And you knew that the Bears, they made some mistakes in those games, and they kind of got away with it. Tonight, or last night, they didn't get away with it at all. They made too many penalties. But to Clovis West's credit, they did what they were supposed to do in order to win that game. They made big plays offensively, and they responded to adversity. And that was, for me, the biggest thing I wanted to see from Clovis West in this game. How could they respond to adversity? Because they never trailed. In any of their first five games, they never trailed. They led against Bullard. They were tied with Bullard for a little bit, but they led against them for the most part. And Edison and Lamore, we talked a lot about Clovis West's strength of schedule. So a lot of us picked Buchanan to win this one. And it looked like it would happen with Jaden Mandel leading a drive for the ages. John Elway-esque, right? 99 yards. We were getting ready to call it the drive, but before we could even process that, Clovis West gets 30 yards on two bad Buchanan penalties. Now, I'm not saying bad because that's a bad call by the ref. I'm just saying you can't put yourself in that situation if you're the Bears to even give the refs a chance to pull out their flag. What I didn't see, but what Jackson Moore saw, because I talked to him about this morning, he saw that it looked like the whistle was blown and two Buchanan players had still not brought the Clovis West player down. They were trying to bring him down, and it was deemed unsportsmanlike conduct, excessive action on the Buchanan Bears. So yeah, they gave him two 15-yard penalties, and Clovis West started the drive 30 yards closer to the end zone than where they would have been. So that's what I'm talking about, right? The Buchanan penalties really hurt the Bears in this one. They made some mistakes in other wins, and they kind of got away with it, but not last night. I still think Buchanan is one of the best teams, but Clovis West showed that they are the best team by beating number one Buchanan last night.
Okay, so Jaden Mandel, it was a 99-yard drive with, how much time was left?
It was 2:42 when he got the football at his own one-yard line.
And then it was capped off by a Michael Runnels 23-yard touchdown
run. Yeah, and that was an exciting play, but in hindsight, they may have scored too early.
Well, yeah, you're looking at the timeouts, how many each team has. You're looking at how good the field goal kickers are, right? Because I know Clovis West has an excellent field goal kicker.
Once they got that 30-yard penalty, it was two 15-yard penalties, but once they got those 30 yards in penalty yardage, I knew they had a chance to win because they got the best kicker in the Valley.
So you're saying the 30 yards was on the same play?
It was on two 15-yard penalties called against Buchanan.
On the same play, that play you're talking about.
On the kickoff return, yes. And so that's what I didn't see it. I was on my phone tweeting it out, trying to keep everyone updated. And I look up and I'm like, this is a long break. And then the ref picks up the football and continues walking with it towards the opposite end zone. And I'm like, okay, maybe like a 10-yard holding call. Maybe Clovis West was called for holding on the return. And then he keeps walking and walking. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This is against Buchanan, obviously. This is penalty for Clovis West. This is good for Clovis West. And then it's 30-yard penalty. I'm like, wow, this is a game changer. And like I said, I didn't see it, but it was described to me as Buchanan tackled a Clovis West player while he was down. But okay, I didn't see it, so I got to see video of it if there's any available.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet either. I'm sure that's going to be a hot topic this coming week as well. But, yeah, so then Marshall Sanders catches a 39-yard touchdown pass from Ryan Markarian. Yeah, that's one that I definitely have seen all over Twitter and on the news, and just dropped it in perfectly. I think you talked to some guys about that play, what was intended and the outcome, but when you watched that play unfold and you saw the celebration and you heard the crowd, just describe what that was like.
That was awesome. I was on the Clovis West sideline the entire time, and Clovis West, I'm so impressed with Clovis West, considering where they were at not too long ago. You know, Clovis West is back. They are back now, and it's awesome when Clovis West is good, Central Section football is good. And, you know, Clovis West is kind of like the New York Yankees in that sense. They're kind of like the Dallas Cowboys. You know, the Cowboys are good, NFL's good. When the Golden Eagles are good. And so with Marshall Sanders catching that touchdown, you just felt it all come back, right? The great Clovis West teams in the past, and, you know, he's going to be a legend now forever for that. He's only a junior, but he's going to be a legend for catching that touchdown in that instant classic. He caught it on a go route. He told me it was supposed to be a design slant, but I don't know how true that is or not, but whatever it was, it was a simple looking at each other with him and Markarian, and they ran a go route, and Sanders beat this deep safety. Sanders, he's one of the top receivers in the section. You got to give it to him. He is absolutely a hard worker. I think he was icing up on the sideline while he was on the sideline when the defense was on the field because he's injured, right? He's battling through some things, but he still went on the field and he still made that big catch. And you know what? What do they say? Big time players make big plays in big games. That's a big time player. And he made that big play. But one more thing about that, they were all, you know, rushing into to the student section and rushing to the crowd and celebrating. And the coaches are screaming like, go for two. You guys got to go for two. It was 22-21 Buchanan after they scored their touchdown. And that touchdown from Markarian Sanders made it a 6-point boost. So it was 27-22, and they wanted to go for two to make it a full touchdown lead. So they went for two. They actually got the 2-point conversion despite them all, you know, not too long ago being on the Clovis West sideline celebrating with the fans. So there you go. Clovis West, you know, what looked like it could be a snafu if they weren't able to get on the field on time, they still converted the 2-point conversion. And then the defense, which we don't talk about enough for Clovis West, the defense made the game-sealing play there.
Yeah, I think they got an interception to seal that win. But, yeah, what an incredible turnaround for Clovis West. Just a year ago, Coach Eric Brown took it over pretty late, took over that program late, went 4-8, and now they are 6-0. And I don't know, we'll see where they end up on a lot of polls. You got to put them number one, I would think, especially on Cal Preps where it really matters. But, yeah, Buchanan falls to 5-1, and, you know, they're going to be right there as well. We got a lot of football in the left in the season, but yeah, what a great turnaround. And man, that just sounds like an instant classic there at La Monica Stadium. There's another instant classic. You talked a lot this week, Gabe, on your show about the Clovis East and Clovis North game. There are a lot of storylines in that. Clovis East 5-0 for the first time in a long time. Clovis North, you know, they're a tough program. They got McKay Madsen back and healthy, but another final second touchdown for Clovis East. But what can you say about them Timberwolves?
Yeah, they're 6-0 now, and I don't know if Clovis West or Clovis East have been 6-0 since 2006. So that's going to be a fun matchup next week. But looking at yesterday's game, Clovis East and Clovis North, they were trading blows. I was there for the first half of that one, and it was just a shootout. It was a track meet in the track. You had just different playmakers stepping up for Clovis East because they didn't have their number one wideout, Harold Duvall. So they were relying on Carson Sandoval to make big downfield catches. Xavier Garcia, and I think I read Sandoval caught 3 touchdowns. Xavier Garcia got the game-winning touchdown with 10 seconds left, the Hail Mary from Ty Miller. Just, you know, Clovis North, I think in the second half they took control of that game, and Clovis East just kept coming back. Like, Clovis East would not go away. They took a lead. Clovis North took the 35-32 lead in the fourth quarter, and it looked like they would hold them. They just needed like one or two more stops. You know, I don't know if Clovis East had a good kicker because earlier in the game in the first half, they had it in field goal range and they went for it on fourth and long. So I don't know if they would have been able to kick a field goal in that situation. It was 35-32. I think they were going for the big shot. And, you know, if you're... I was talking to someone at the Clovis West Buchanan game, and they asked me, what does prevent defense prevent you, Gabe?
And
prevents you from winning. Clovis North is playing prevent defense, and it prevented them from winning because they still found, Clovis East still found the hole in that gap and in that defense. And Xavier Garcia, he's 6'3", so all he had to do is go up and catch it. He had the size advantage on his man. But I thought it was funny because last night I saw a lot of prevent defense, right? What does prevent defense get you? Prevents you from winning. Buchanan played prevent defense, lost to Clovis West. Clovis North played prevent defense, lost to Clovis East. But that just shows you how talented the track is this year.
No, absolutely. And I spoke too soon, man. I've had a whirlwind last 48 hours of my life. And so you actually tweeted it out. You have it on ABC 30. If you go to at Gabe Camarillo underscore, he tweeted out the Hail Mary play. It looks like on the right side, Ty Miller is about a 45, threw it from about the 45 yard line. And yeah, there's a Clovis East guys going crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. If they don't get that pass, what are they going to do? Because it's 10 seconds after that play. You got about two more, but you got to go to the end zone because, like I said, I don't know what the kicker situation's like. I know they had a fantastic kicker, Bryant Thau, a couple years ago, but they weren't going to go for it on fourth and long inside their own 30. So I think they were going to go for it all the time.
Well, and then tomorrow, next week, there is those two teams are going to be matching up, Clovis East and Clovis West. And actually, Gonzo gave me the permission to say that it's a really good chance that 1430 ESPN is going to be at that game next week. So Clovis West, Clovis East next week. Who knew a year ago or even 2 years ago that those two teams would be 6-0
in the season? A year ago, they won four games. Both teams won four games a year ago. And this year, they're 6-0.
Well, I believe Clovis East had only won their four games were in non-league, right? They only won one league game last year. Any other scores that surprise you? So there was one that jumped out at me. It was down at Bakersfield. Ridgeview beat Frontier. I know a lot of us had Frontier in our top 10. And then I mentioned that Dinuba and Hanford game, man. Never count out those Emperors, right? So I texted Coach CJ Lester from Dinuba, and he says, our kids always believe, Paul. That was his response. That's all he had to tweet out, and I totally understand that. So what a great thing, great game down there. Any other games jump out to you from last night that surprised you?
How about a stat line from Central Valley Christian versus Kerman? I don't know if you've heard this, so I might get your reaction live.
No, what do you got?
Bryson Donaldson, the new transfer running back for CVC, carried the ball only six times last night, but he still got...
Let me guess. Okay, I don't know. six times... 163.
100 yards more. 261 yards on six carries.
Come on, guys.
Three touchdowns for Bryson Donaldson against Kerman.
Okay.
And CVC just got better. And they were already good. They were already a D2 title contender, and they got better with Bryson Donaldson, now eligible after his sit-out period's complete after he's transferred from El Diamante.
Well, you think he had a lot of pent-up athleticism in him after having sit out all those games and be on the sidelines. Yeah, you got to take that rock and go with it.
It's going to be a fun 2 years at CVC with Donaldson in the backfield.
And, again, we're pointing to that October 14th date when they take on Kingsburg. And, we were at the Kingsburg game, and do a little recap of that. First of all, what an incredible atmosphere that is at Kingsburg. They got a great team, 5-0 going into that game, and now 6-0. You know, it's truly a medium to small school atmosphere. The town shuts down for it. It was homecoming. There were posters, homecoming posters all over the town, downtown. There were probably about 3,000 people there. The Kingsburg side of the stadium was packed. There were food trucks there. It had everything. The field was in great shape. Plenty of room in the bleachers, but... Kingsburg started off a little slow. They were down 7-0 after an interception, got the ball in the 15, and was able to convert a third down touchdown play. And then after that, it was all Kingsburg. They are as advertised. Their defense is really good. Their offense is very, very balanced. We're going to be talking with Trace Jackson here in a few minutes, the running back. Connor McFall, who was named Homecoming King, had two catches. You talk about, Donaldson's yards per carry. Well, there were two catches for about 100 and 140 yards for McFall and two touchdowns. But, yeah, really, really good team for Kingsburg. And, congratulations to them. But what an incredible night of football. Anything else, Gabe? You got the last word here in our conversation?
Well, there were three, I think, down-to-the-wire games you mentioned. We talked about the two track games and all that good stuff. But Dinuba and CJ Lester and the pick six that helped make it happen. Hanford was leading 30-22 in I think midway through the fourth quarter, and Dinuba gets a pick six, and this is awesome for CJ Lester because he used to be a safety when he used to play football. A pick six to put them within two. They get the 2-point conversion to tie the game, to send it to overtime, and they win in overtime. Now, that's a fully, as far as I know, that's a fully healthy Hanford team with Caden Muir back. So Dinuba beating Hanford, what does that mean for Hanford, right? Does Hanford now fall down to Division II? And is it actually better for Hanford to play in Division II, right? Now they might be playing against the CVC and a Kingsburg in D2, but this is their division. This is their base division. If they were in D1, they would have to face Clovis West, Buchanan, Liberty, Memorial. I don't know. I know the Hanford Bullpups are good, but I don't know if they're D1 elite good. So I think by losing to Dinuba, it actually might help them because they will compete in Division II. They still have to face some very good teams in CBC and Kingsburg, but I think that's where they belong.
Yeah, good call there. And I definitely want to mention some CMAC games. Bullard beat Madera 35-14 on their homecoming. And San Joaquin Memorial was all over Edison 42-20. Congratulations to Memorial coach Anthony Gostin for winning his 150th game as a Panthers coach. He was a player there, and he went right into coaching after college. So, yeah, congrats to him. He's an awesome guy. I love talking with him. And then Sanger beat Garza 24-13. And then I'll throw in one more. My alma mater, Emmanuel, came back to beat Reedley 27-23. So, thanks, Gabe. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And have a great rest of your day. Have fun at the wedding. And I can't wait to listen to McKay at 10:54.
Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Thanks, Gabe. That's Gabe Camarillo. You can follow him again on Twitter and listen to his show, Home Field Advantage, Monday through Thursday. Follow him on Twitter at @GabeCamarillo_. Okay. After the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about Kingsburg football. We got their main running back, Trace Jackson, here. The name Jackson sounds familiar. Yes, he has two older brothers who also started Kingsburg and a long line of uncles and dads. And his name Jackson is synonymous with Kingsburg football. So talking with Trace coming up after the break on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. Talked a little bit about last night's game that we were able to broadcast on 1430 ESPN. Jose Gonzalez and I were at Kingsburg, the great town of Kingsburg, California. And we have one of the stars of the team, Trace Jackson from Kingsburg High School, senior. You guys are now 6-0. Before the game, he came in with 583 yards and 7 touchdowns. You definitely added to that total. You had 26 carries for 159 yards last night. And, I got to mention, I don't know, you were held out of the end zone, but you actually, I thought you scored on a touchdown run. We might get into that later, that they called you a little bit short, so that's probably burning you up a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
Trace?
For sure. Yeah, I totally reached and got in on that one, but you know what? We're not going to talk about that. I'm just really proud of the team last night. We came out maybe a little slow, Washington Union. They played us hard. Their defense was really good, and they got that early pick, scored first. We kind of got punched in the mouth, but I'm just proud of our team for when our back's against the wall, just stepping up and just kind of settling our minds and getting in the game and figuring stuff out on the offensive side of the ball. And our defense just played lights out last night. Really, our first team held them to 7 points. And at the end of the game, they scored one more. But, I'm proud of our offense, too, for at the beginning of the game, kind of hard to get things going. But yeah, we figured it out and just really balanced last night. We had a hard time with the run at first, and we went to the pass and made things work, and that opened up the run after that. And all credit to the guys up front too, because they just do a great job week after week.
Yeah, Jose Gonzalez and I were just really impressed. It's the first time I've been able to watch you guys live. Just impressed with the balance, right? There's some teams out there that, yeah, they got a really good passing game, but they got no running game, right? Or they got a solid offensive line, but they don't have any running backs, right? But offensively, defensively, throwing the ball, running the ball, you guys are extremely balanced. I think, come playoff time and, and in some of the tougher games are going to be on the rest of your schedule, that's going to go a long way. But yeah, you mentioned how you're a little bit of a slow start, right? And you personally, I know we I watched you out there on the field, and I could tell a little bit frustrated. Man, you should have busted this run a little bit more and caught behind the line of scrimmage. So as a running back, though, when things aren't going your way, and some of the holes that you usually hit for whatever reason aren't quite working, offensive coordinator maybe make some adjustments. Coach Wilson, I believe, calls the plays, right? Make some adjustments. So How are you able to stay focused when things aren't going your way in a game? Because there's still a lot of football left.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we're a team that likes to establish a run game first. But when something like that doesn't work out early in the game, I think it's good for a running back to just focus on a way he can contribute in another way. Especially last night when our run game wasn't working early, the mental switch was just, hey, we're going to be really good at pass blocking. And we're going to make sure our quarterback has time to get it to our athletes on the perimeter, and we're going to make things work there. And I think that's what we focused on in that second quarter. We make a few big plays happen, and then after that, the box softens up a little bit, and it opens up the run game. So I think just making that mental switch that you might not contribute with getting a lot of yards, but you're going to contribute in a way that you're going to protect your quarterback and make sure your guys on the perimeter can make some plays.
No, absolutely, and we saw that. There was a long touchdown to Connor McFall that got you guys going, and you had another 49-yard touchdown. So, yeah, as a running back, you're like, heck yeah, let's get that passing game going and soften up the defense. And I know number 5 for Washington Union is a really good linebacker. And so, yeah, I think in that first quarter or so, they were really focused on stopping you. But second half was a different story. You had some really, really tough runs. Oh, we were impressed. You were bouncing off guys and spinning around and falling forward. And I think there was one play where I think you almost ran into the ref.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I think, right? I took the ref out last night.
I think you
night.
Did
yeah.
take him out.
Yeah, I mean, if he's in the way, I'm going to have to run through him.
And you did so, and kind of backpedaling a little bit and falling backwards for some extra yards. But, yeah, it was a great overall performance. And you got a pretty good quarterback. You got a fellow senior classmate, Ethan Winslow, and then McFall is a senior as well. Winslow had 3 touchdowns in that game, passing. But before the season, right, and we'll talk a little bit about last year in that game against Buller, but – you know, you guys knew you're gonna have a good team. You returned a lot of players from the year before. Were there some goals set by you and your classmates or the coaching staff? Were you just like, hey, one game at a time? Do you know this was going to be a special season? What was the mentality going into this year?
Yeah, I think our team came into this season just with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. After kind of feeling like we had to play a D1 team and a D2, a Division
in
2. Yeah, in Bullard last year in the playoffs. And we had a great team last year as well. We just kind of came in fired up, like, hey, if we're going to be playing these D1 level teams, then we better make sure we're ready for them, you know. And obviously the goal is always to win a Valley Championship for us. And that's been the goal from day one, and that's what we plan to do still. And it doesn't matter if we're going to be playing Hanford, if we're playing Buchanan, or if we're playing CVC, you know. We're going to play hard-nosed Kingsburg football. And at Kingsburg, we don't get a lot of outside transfers, or we're one high school town. So the guys playing on our team are Kingsburg guys. But I think that makes it special for us, too, because we truly do care about our town. And it's not about our individual stats or how we perform individually. We care about doing well for, you know, that old guy in the stadium that's come to every single game for 50 years, you know. And we truly do love the atmosphere at Kingsburg and just – how fun football is to play in Kingsburg, and we want to win Valley for our town, you know.
Absolutely, and it was clearly evident last night. And yeah, you're right. You see, you know, a lot of grandpas and grandmas are at the game. They even have their little blankets out. You know,
yeah,
it's September 30th,
sure.
But they got their blankets. They're sitting on the blankets and all that stuff. So yeah, it's one thing that impressed me too about Kingsburg. Again, we're talking with Trace Jackson. Is I went to the practice on Tuesday, and you know, you had your JV team, JV and freshman boys were practicing on the field next to you guys. And I asked Coach Wilson, well, how many guys you got in your program? He says, well, we're close to 100. Okay, close to 100 kids in the Kingsburg High football program, freshman to senior. Then when the practice was over, who was out there? Well, it's the little guys, the little Kingsburg guys. And you see them with their Kingsburg jerseys at the football game last night. You watch them practice, see the dads out there, right, coaching the little guys how to hit. I mean, some of them, it looked like the shoulder pads weighed more than them.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? So that's just the community of Kingsburg through and through right there. And like we said on the broadcast last night as well, it's Kingsburg football is not going away, right? And that's the reason why they're going to be – They're just going to reload and reload. So that's just the mentality that they have with the program, though. But you also you come from a football family, right? And football through and through. You're a football guy. Your two older brothers played football, Bo and Jet. And you know, what was it like growing up around football? I know you guys have wrestling in your blood as well, but what was it like growing up in a football family?
Yeah, I even just remember watching my older cousins in the Tyler Bray era play football. They were all offensive linemen, and those were just fun times in Kingsburg. Those are my first memories for sure of watching football, is watching my cousins win Valley Championships with Tyler Bray, you know. And yeah, even watching my two older brothers, they're great athletes. And I think that's kind of given me a goal as an athlete too. I want to live up to what my brothers have created in Kingsburg and just be hard football players that are going to focus on being a great football player for Kingsburg High School, you know. And not really focusing on anything outside of that, but just being good for Kingsburg High School. And I've appreciated that with my family. I think even a shout out to all the family members listening right now. We get together usually on Saturday mornings and talk about the football game, eat some waffles. So shout out to Winter Waffles. They're all listening right now. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, your dad is here. Your dad brought you, and he showed me a picture before you came on air of what's going on there. So, yeah, Winter Waffles, that's what you guys call it?
Oh, yeah. Yep, every Saturday.
All right. So now I know where to go. It's Saturday mornings before the show. I'm going to head over there to Kingsburg first. But I heard you you got a nickname. Huh? Yeah, there's a little laugh. Are you you ready to tell the world what that nickname is?
Well, you know, as a joke, I kind of have been telling our skill players that, you know, they call me Golden Paws because I catch every ball that they throw to me, even though I hardly get any receptions a game. I'm a running back. They just give it to me up the middle and say, go hit somebody, you know. But, yeah, the guys don't like it that I call myself that just as a joke. But I don't think I'm going to be able to call myself that. After last night, I dropped a screen pass right in my hands. You saw that one. I think I saw so much green grass in front of me. Might have ran for another 50 yards, but you know, it is what it is, and it's a fun time out there at Kingsburg messing around with each other. We all have a good, strong bond on our team, and we love playing with each other. We've been playing with each other since we were on Mighty Mites and Pee-wees.
That's what it's called, Mighty Mites?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we all have a super strong bond as players, and it's just been kind of a journey together, all together playing since we were really little kids. And I think that's why we got each other's backs so well, too, just because we know each other well, and we've been together for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, me personally, I have a connection to Kingsburg. I teach in Traver, and my students go to Kingsburg High. We're a K-8 school, and I coach the 8th grade flag football team. And that's when the name Jackson, when I got to compete as a coach against the Jacksons, your older brothers, and then you show up as a 7th grader playing varsity against us. I'm like, what, another Jackson? Come on, man. I thought I got rid of these guys. So, yeah, we had some good battles back in the day. Traver versus Clay. You went to a school called Clay Elementary. But, yeah, we definitely had some good battles there. That was a lot of fun. So this is a lot of fun. Like, life comes full circle, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Game, and then I get a show, and then you're on the show. This is a lot of fun. So you talked about your memories growing up in Kingsburg, but you have any other sports that you play growing up? Most kids start off playing soccer, kicking the ball around or anything like that, or any other sports you play growing up?
Yeah, actually, I never played youth soccer because I was on the first ever Kingsburg Mighty Mite team. You know, we had Pee-wees for a long time, but yeah, I was on the first Kingsburg Mighty Mite team, so that was my first introduction to sports. And then also as a kid, I wrestled. My dad was a great wrestler in high school, won a state championship. So shout out to him for raising us well. And then also, just the youth baseball in Kingsburg is really fun too, because you're always playing against your friends, you know? So we love doing that. So yeah, Kingsburg, just a great place to play sports as a kid.
And you're going to wrestle on the wrestling team this year?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay. That's the plan. What do you like better, college? Well, first of all, I do have to say this, Trace. Yeah, if you ever want a job in the media industry, you are so well spoken for a high school senior.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Your knowledge of high school sports, when we were talking the other day too, you're like, yeah, this school does this. You know all the Visalia schools. Yeah, this guy's a good player. I was surprised that this team beat this team. So, gosh, maybe you can do a little internship here at 1430 ESPN.
Yeah,
you do an amazing job.
For sure.
You are very well spoken. So, you love high school sports, right?
Mm-hmm.
College or the NFL? What do you like, prefer?
College, 100%. I just think those guys, they're just playing hard football always. I think it's a lot more entertaining, a lot of big plays, a lot of upsets. NFL's a fun time, don't get me wrong, and I love playing fantasy football like every other guy. But I just think college is a great atmosphere. I think a lot more rivalry, and just guys really trying to get to that higher level, so they're playing even harder, you know. And that's why it reminds me a lot of high school football too, which is obviously the greatest there is, high school football. Central Valley.
I knew you were going to say
Central
that.
Central Valley high school football is the best for sure. But, yeah, I really love college football.
What are your Fresno State? Rise up is up there. You're wearing a Fresno State Bulldog shirt, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Who are some of your other favorite teams you've loved to watch over the years?
I like Fresno State. My brother actually attends Auburn University, so I try to root for them, even though, you know, they're on a down year this year. And then after that, I mean, it's more of the teams I don't like, you know. I'm not a big fan of Alabama. I'm not a big fan of Notre Dame
Good
or Michigan.
You. Good for you.
But, you know, yeah, there's the few teams that I'll try to root for when they're playing. But, yeah, I don't have a specific team. I like individual players, and I like different coaches too. So, yeah, I love watching college football.
Okay, so speaking of – I'd like to talk about your experience. You went to Auburn a couple weeks ago to visit your brother, and you got to go to a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which game was it?
They played Penn State. They got worked.
They got worked in that Penn State game. But I just talk about the environment, you know, what that SEC football looks like, and, you know, just
yeah,
it's,
for
it's
sure.
just a new, the different level.
Yeah, SEC football, what I learned when I went there is it's a lifestyle, you know. Every single Saturday, every person in Auburn is tailgating, and they're with their friends, and they're getting ready to go just create a great atmosphere in that stadium, you know. And when I got in there, I'd never seen anything like it, you know. All the tradition that's involved and everything about it is just so hyped up, you know. And it's a little disappointing that they can't get a good program after all that, you know,
yeah,
hoop and holler. But, you know, it's still a great time, and SEC football is just a different lifestyle for sure.
But it doesn't hold a candle to winter waffles.
Oh, no. Winter waffles is the best there is, you know. And actually, above that, Kingsburg football is the best
there
is.
Go.
You were at the game last night, and that atmosphere is just – it's unbeatable. We walk into the bagpipes, and your heart starts racing. And we run through that tunnel with the fire extinguishers going off. And I just love the town of Kingsburg in the sense that everyone really cares – about the high school and the sports involved with the high school, throughout all sports too, basketball, baseball, whatever it may be, the town really cares and they're really involved, and it just makes you feel good as a player that people care.
No, absolutely, and you know what? Probably one of the great things that about high school football too is after the games, right? You get to hang out with your friends on the field. Your family members are coming up. They're maybe taking some pictures. So I love that. And I saw that last night after the game, right? Just, you know, everyone talking and mingling and talking about the game and all that stuff. Is there – only got a few minutes, Trace. I knew time was going to be flying by here. But is there – what's been your favorite, like, moment slash – play? Again, you got the rest of your senior year to play, but has there been a special moment either on the field or off the field during your high school football career at Kingsburg?
Yeah, I think we've had some great games these past few years at Kingsburg High School. Last year we had a good OT game, a win to overtime with Dinuba. We played a great game versus CVC last year. Our starting quarterback went down and we still put off the win, and that was a fun game. But the game that tops them all off is during our COVID season. We only had that 5-game season and we went 5-0, but our last game of the season we played a really good Selma team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember the name Aaron Blancas or John Ambrose, great athletes. And we had a great team that year as well. And we knew we weren't going to get a shot for Valley because the season was ending after that game. And it was heartbreaking. But it also was nice because we're like, hey, this is our last game of the season. And we're just going to give it our all. And it came down to 2-minute drive in the fourth quarter. We were down by a touchdown. We were down by 2 points. And we had a freshman quarterback in Max Workentine.
Yeah.
Going to have to drive us whatever it was, 75 yards in 2 minutes. And we got down to fourth down within our red zone, and we decided to kick the field goal for the win. And shout out to my man Daniel Ortega, who made that game-winning field goal. And I think that was just my favorite moment as a Kingsburg Viking, just because it capped off that heartbreaking season so well. We didn't have the chance for Valley, and it was a lot of ups and downs. Oh, you're playing football. You're not playing football this year. And just to cap it off for our seniors with a game-winning field goal against our biggest rival was just so amazing to everyone. And the town of Kingsburg's flood in the field, you know. I think we got a lot of personal fouls for the celebrations we did, you know. But it was just – that's for sure my favorite memory as a Viking.
That's awesome. And I think that just embodies your personality. You are you know, you're a team first guy, and you love to celebrate with your teammates. I didn't – even last night – Your number four, Irigoyen, had a 70-yard touchdown run, right? And late in the game, it was incredible, and everyone was going nuts. And you were one of the guys that was celebrating. You were on the sidelines, right?
Yeah,
because you had been taken out because it was late in the fourth quarter. You had this incredible run, but you were celebrating with your guys. And sure, those are the types of moments that you're going to remember as well. Yeah. You're going to remember a lot of your touchdowns, right? And game-winning plays. But when you can celebrate like that with your teammates, that's what makes it special. What is in store for the future for Trace Jackson?
You know, I haven't really promoted myself much for the next level of football. So for me, the plan right now is just finish my senior year playing high school football and be satisfied with that. I plan to go to college. I'm not sure where yet, but God's in control, and all glory to Him and everything I do. I want to honor Him and all of that as well. I'm not sure where I'm going to go next, but I'm just really happy for the experiences I've had at Kingsburg High School playing football. And I think my coaches, Coach Wilson is a great coach, creates a great atmosphere for us. And right now I'm really just focused in the near future playing CVC. That's what I'm focused on. That's the plan right now. I'm not really sure, but the Lord's in control, and I'm just trusting in Him on where He's going to lead me.
Absolutely. That's a perfect answer. And so, I've had the pleasure of watching you and your brothers, since your early, since your elementary days, and watching you for the first time this season for Kingsburg High running the ball. And you run with passion, you run with desire, you run with heart, and you got the complete package. So I know whatever you decide to do. And then coaches, hey, if you want a hard-nosed, great kid, good GPA, he's right here. He's your man, Trace Jackson.
I appreciate it.
You bet. Kingsburg High School, thanks for coming on. This was a pleasure for me, and I hope you had a good time.
All righty. Thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure for me as well. Go Vikings.
Go Vikings. All right. Thanks, Trace Jackson, Kingsburg High. Coming up after the break, we're going to be chatting with McKay Christensen. More than an hour talking with McKay. You guys are definitely not going to want to miss this. One of the greatest athletes of all time coming out of our Central section. Coming up on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Meadors. You can follow me on Twitter at PaulMeadors. And I have been pumping up and teasing this interview for a few weeks now, and now is the time. I have McKay Christensen, class of 1994, Clovis West, Clovis Unified, Clovis West Baseball, Clovis West Football Hall of Fame, part of that incredible 14-0 Valley Championship team in football, NorCal Football Player of the Year, scored 44 touchdowns, number 6 pick in the 1994 Major League Baseball Draft, played for the Angels, White Sox, or by the Angels, play for the White Sox, Dodgers, and Mets. First of all, McKay, this is an incredible honor, and I can't wait for you just to share with the people of the Central Valley what you've been up to, reminisce about the past, and just talk about all those great times at Clovis West and your time playing professional baseball and beyond.
I can't wait to do it, Paul. I'm the one that's honored. I like I was telling you in the before we jumped on, I have so many fond memories of growing up in Fresno. I love the people. I love my home. Still is my home. And I'm the one that's honored.
Well, speaking of home, you're a Clovis West grad, and you're well known throughout the Central Valley and the state. But when you relocated to Utah, when did you exactly relocate to Utah, and where are you living now?
So I'm in a town called Highland, Utah. We're probably about 20 minutes south of Salt Lake, right in between Provo and Salt Lake City. And we moved here in 97. So it's been a minute. I was drafted, went on a mission to Tokyo, came back. And as soon as I got back, my parents moved up here. My dad got kind of a really rare disease and got really sick. And as soon as he was healed up, they decided to make the transition. And this is where we've been ever since.
And when was the last time? I know you have a lot of friends here, and your heart is here as well. But when was the last time in Fresno? And when you do visit Fresno, like, do you have a go-to place, or you have a special restaurant that you grew up going to, or any place like that?
Oh, Doghouse. Well, I didn't grow up going to the Doghouse, but I go to the Doghouse every time I come. It's the first place that I hit up when I roll into town. And the last time, I think I was just there maybe a year ago. Was it last year? It was either last year or year before. I find myself down there about every other year. maybe.
Well, and I know the reason why, because you keep getting elected to all these Hall of Fames. So there's all these Hall of Fame ceremonies you have to attend here in Fresno.
Well, I don't know. They can't get rid of me, I guess. But I love coming back home. And the doghouse is a place that I always hit up and love that. Most of the places that I grew up with, some of them aren't there anymore, but that I grew up with. But yeah, I always hit up the doghouse. I love that place.
Well, and in Utah there, you're having a good time coaching your son. I see on Instagram a lot of the posts that you have about your boys, and your son's a senior in high school and having an incredible year. His team is 4-1. And am I right? Did they win a state division championship last year in Utah?
They did. Yeah, they won the state last year when he was a junior. And had a really, really good year as a junior. He was on a competitive 7-on-7 team over the summer, and they toured all over the country and tore it up. He did phenomenal there. And now he's a senior, and it's a little unfortunate because they had a really good quarterback last year. They don't got a kid that is a great athlete, really, really good baseball player actually, but didn't actually play football last year. And so this is, he's their quarterback. And so they've had a little bit of a hard time being on time and in rhythm and in sync. But he's the type of kid where he could turn 3 yards into 80. He's pretty electric. And it's just, as a dad, I get more anxiety watching him than I ever did playing by far. but I love it. It's so fun for me.
And you're able to coach him this year too, right? Were you traveling with them in 7-7 and coaching him as well? But you're able to coach him right now in high school?
No, I don't coach. They've got a phenomenal coaching staff. They've got two former NFL guys, Gary Pay, who's a former lineman in the NFL, Ryan Denny, who was a D-end in the NFL. They've got a couple former college guys that coach. I mean, they got a talented coaching staff. I coached my 13-year-old. They probably wouldn't let me on the field coaching my older boy. I'm not qualified. But I coached my 13-year-old, and I love doing it.
And you have another son that's a baller too, don't you?
Yeah, that's my 13-year-old.
You're 13.
He's got his mom's genes. I think he's going to be over 6 feet, and he's got a pretty good hose, and he can run, and he's mobile, and we'll see what happens. But he's slinging it right now. I mean, last game we played, he only ran the ball twice. I think he had 4 passing touchdowns and ran for. Well, he didn't run for one, but he can sling it all over the field. It's been fun to watch him play too.
So the Christensen boys football legacy is going to live on, and I know Cole's got a couple offers, right? I mean, there's some Division I interest in him as well, right?
He doesn't have any offers yet. He's got a lot of people that are interested in him, and they have said that they just want to see film. He's a little bit, he's kind of undersized. He's about 5'10", 165 pounds, but he's young. He's about 9 months younger than I was, 8.5 months younger than I was when I was a senior. And so he'll graduate when he's 17 years old. He really probably should be a junior.
Wow.
So he still has a little bit of growing to do, but he can fly. He's a low 4.4. I think by the time he gets into college, he'll be in the 4.3s is what I think, in his 40. And he's got phenomenal hands. He's the smartest player on the field. He's kind of like a Cooper Kupp. He knows coverages. He knows where he needs to be, when he can win, how he can win. He's got a lot more than I had when I was his age in terms of his understanding of the game, his will to win. He's gonna be a great for the team that chooses to take him and wants to invest in him. He'll be a really good receiver in the future, I think. I've been so proud of him.
All right, all you college coaches, you guys heard that. Cole Christensen is out there in Utah, got good speed, good hands. Instead is more advanced than his father at this age. So that sounds like an incredible prospect right there. Okay, so going back to you, when you were young, are there some memories that your family likes to talk about, or a story of how you showed some great athletic prowess maybe as a toddler or just learning to walk? Is there something special that they saw in you? Maybe yeah, you're terrorizing the room or something and knocking things over at a young age?
My dad always says that I was walking when I was like 6 months old. I don't know if I'm buying that or not, but he says that I was running around the house when I was really young. And you know, I don't know. I think it's just, you know, as now being a dad, you know, watching your kids grow up, you can certainly see where there are certain things that set them apart from other kids. And you know, when I was a boy, I certainly remember having those moments. And I'm sure my parents, I'm sure they saw them, you know, from time to time when I was a kid growing up.
Well, what do you think you took to first? Did you take to football and running around the front yard? You pick up a bat early and were able to swing it. What do you think you took to first?
Honestly, you probably would remember, but we didn't actually start football until we were in fifth grade, right? Because everything, I don't know if it's still, but it was all run through our elementary school. So I went to Dry Creek and then to Fort Washington. And so the first time I actually started playing football was when I was in fifth grade. So I was playing sports before that. I was playing soccer. I was a really, really good soccer player. And soccer, I think, helped me a lot when I was young. I had to learn how to dribble with both feet. It was a lot like football and just understanding spacing, understanding how to get around guys. I loved soccer as a young boy. Baseball, some of my fondest memories, some of my most early memories, I would say, are in baseball, just because league baseball, we started earlier. And, I remember going to Bicentennial Park, just right around from the old Peacock Market there in downtown Clovis. And I played on a team called Wise Men. I couldn't have been more than 7 or 8 years old. And back then we used to be sponsored by different companies, and we were called the Wise Men with a Y. And I had a coach that, you know, was a chain smoker, and I had a handlebar mustache but absolutely loved me and had me pitch and actually I played shortstop as a lefty.
Okay.
But I just had such wonderful memories as a kid playing in downtown Clovis, and those are some of my first, certainly I think baseball. And then when I got into football, one of the best memories that I have as a young kid in football, earliest memories that I have, is playing at the carnival. I don't know if they even still do that. We used to have like this elementary school carnival.
Yeah, they do. I think they still do. Yeah.
We just don't have here in Utah the same kind of history and tradition and culture surrounding all of that. But gosh, I remember as a kid having, you know, all of the elementary schools come and we'd cut the field in half. And we wouldn't play in a full 100-yard field, and you'd have, I want to say, like maybe 7 plays at a time or something like that. And we'd have all the balloons strung up and cheerleaders there. For those of you who have your boys who are playing there, if it's the same as it was when I was a boy, it's a one of a kind experience for these kids. And I was just lucky to be a part of it when I was that young.
Yeah, and I think all of us that grew up in the late 80s and early 90s, we all had that chain smoking handlebarred mustache coach that wore like that satin jacket and would sit in the dugout and yell at the umps and all that. I mean, if you didn't grow up with somebody like that, that's not living.
You are living. That's right. You're a softie.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I think every league had at least one or two of those types of guys. That's awesome. Growing up though, when did you first feel like, I mean, was there a moment when you just outran everybody, right? Or you hit the ball a little bit farther than everybody? Is there some specific moment that you remember like that?
You know, I remember it early when I was playing soccer. I could just get through everybody and outrun everybody to the ball. And I remember it in football when I was young. I went through a period where I was probably 6th, 7th, and 8th grade where I was still fast, but I matured really late. Like I was kind of small. And I do remember kids passing me dramatically, like just a couple kids that were huge, huge, huge. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like I went from being the fastest kid on the field to still separating, but not being as dominant, probably all the way up to when I was in eighth. And then, you know, I remember, you know, and I was always doing my thing. Like I was always, I always had success and was always doing my thing. But I remember that the margin between me and everybody else closed when I was in seventh and eighth. I just think it was the maturity of some kids. And then I remember being pulled up to the varsity team as a freshman. Coach Churchill called me up, and I mean, I couldn't have weighed more than 140 pounds, maybe at the most. I was small, and Josh Madsen, I'm sure you remember.
Yep.
Josh Madsen, uh-huh. He played Stanford. He was always one of my idols and mentors and someone that I just looked up to. And Josh was, you know, 6'3", probably 215 as a senior. He was a senior and I was a freshman. And I felt like everybody was 6'3", 215. But, and I was kind of picked on quite a bit, but I do remember no one could catch me. I just remember feeling like at the out and outright speed, you know, there may have been guys that probably could have beat me as a freshman in the 40 that were on that team, but they couldn't catch me.
Yeah.
I was just too quick and too shifty. And that was, and I scored my first touchdown as a freshman in one of the playoff games. I think it was against Porterville. And I remember Coach Churchill was like, McKay, that is going to be the first of many. And you know, he was gone the next year and Blankenship came in when I was a sophomore. But I just remember thinking, I can do this and I can do it different. And I was, you know, the other thing I was fortunate in, I grew up in that we had a large backyard and I grew up with the Madsens and the Shreve. Scott Shreve was a quarterback. Steve Shreve was a receiver. My older brother was a phenomenal athlete at Clovis West. We had the Thompsons, Matt Thompson, Pat Thompson. I mean, these were all really good athletes that did really, really good things in the Valley. And they were within 3 to 5 minutes of my house. And we were constantly in the backyard playing. And so I was, you know, I had to level up against guys that were 7 years, 5 and 7 years older than me. And I just remember always being able to make guys miss and even when they were much older. And so, but it probably wasn't until I was a freshman that I really felt, you know, in my older years that things were different.
We're talking with McKay Christensen from Clovis West. Now, when you were playing against those older guys, did you feel like you had to earn their respect, right? Or, you know, you said maybe they gave you a hard time, but they're like, man, kid, this kid's good, but he still has to earn it. Like, how, what did that look like?
Oh, gosh, without question. Like, Danny Medina and Johnny, Narcigian, is that what it was? When I was a freshman, they were juniors, and I got out and outright bullied. I mean, when I say bullied, nothing that ever, you know, I went home and cried about.
Yeah.
They just did not like me. They did not want me on the team. They didn't want me around. I remember walking into the clubhouse one day and just getting teased and belittled, right? And, you know, as a freshman, I was intimidated.
Yeah.
Really quite a bit, you know, and especially cause other than Josh, I didn't know anybody. In fact, I would get tackled and Josh would be like peeling people off of, I was just running scout team and literally I was running for my life, running scout team against all of these seniors. And, so yeah, it was, but you know, the cute thing about it is the following year when I was a sophomore, Danny and Johnny were on the team. They both were, I think both, one played corner and then I can't remember where Danny played, but we became good friends and I earned their respect. And once I earned their respect, you know, they were the guys that were picking me up and peeling guys peeling guys off of me when I got tackled. And it was a great learning experience for me I just kind of internalize things and realize that in order to earn their respect, I had to win on the field. And once I did, then, you know, I our relationship changed, which was cool. And I don't want to be too hard on them because they're good guys and they were in total good to me, you know?
Yeah. And I think you see that all over. Right. And then once if there's a 2-year age gap, I mean, let's be honest, when you're a senior and there's a sophomore on the team or even a freshman, you're like, okay, we necessarily don't want this kid, but if he could help us win ball games, yeah, okay, cool. But you know, because these seniors, they've been waiting since, you know, their Kazner days or Fort Washington days for their senior year, and they don't want some freshman or sophomore coming in and taking reps from them. So no, yeah, we totally understand all that. And so something happened though. Your sophomore year, you played a little basketball too, and I got a fun story I'll tell later, a little personal story with Coach Wahlberg and you. But you played a little basketball, and you had something that you thought was going to change the course of your career that sophomore year, with your knee. So what happened on that?
So yeah, my sophomore year, I was playing. We had just finished up football. I was playing varsity basketball, and we were in the middle of practice. I was a point guard. We had a fast break. I remember it distinctly. I was, you know, it was kind of your typical it was like a 3-on-2 fast break, and I pulled up for a jump shot. Actually, I dribbled down and I went to pull up and make a jump shot, and I turned sideways as I did it, and my knee just buckled on me. And it was one of those ones where it shifts. You know, if you've ever had that happen with an ACL, you feel it shift. It goes in and out, and you know something is – I didn't know what it was, but I knew something was dramatically wrong. And yeah, that did. It changed the course of you know, at least the next 3 years for me.
So did you know – you knew right away there's something wrong? Was there a trainer there? Did you call your parents? Hey, let's go get this checked out right now. What was that like?
Yeah, so I went down in a heap on the ground, right? And I knew something was not right. There was a trainer there, just in the, if I remember, right, the backside of the locker room at in the gym there. And so they took me back there and they looked at it. But they said, McKay, you got to go in and see a doctor. So I went in and I saw two guys that were so, so good to me, Dr. Hansen and Dr. Kraft. And went in to see Dr. Hansen. Dr. Hansen said, McKay, that was the first time it shifted on me. I can't remember if I had an MRI at that point or if they just said, look, let's try to rehab it and get you healthy. I didn't play basketball the rest of the season. I packed it in on basketball, never played again. And then went and finished my sophomore year of baseball with a knee brace on. The very end of that year, Blankenship, we had a PE class with football at the end of that year, and we were getting ready for, you know, just for PE. We were all playing like frisbee football or something. And no, it wasn't frisbee. We were playing football. Anyway, I went down the sidelines and I went to cut back against the grain on somebody, and it shifted on me again. That time I went into Hansen and Kraft again. They did an MRI and they told me that my ACL was torn. So that was at the end of my sophomore year, and I ended up getting surgery immediately. And I missed my whole junior year in football, was able to play my junior in baseball, and then played my senior and junior year in football and baseball.
And then did you feel like the summer before your football year, was there some trepidation with the knee? Do you remember the first time you took a cut where you're like, okay, I'm healthy? The first time you got hit, was there a moment you're like, okay, I'm back on track and maybe even feeling stronger than ever?
Yeah, for sure. In fact, I was about, I want to say it was somewhere between 6 and 8 months out from surgery, post-surgery, when we played in the Valley Championship my junior year. So I sat on the sidelines my whole junior year and watched all my boys run the table and went undefeated, went into the Valley Championship. And I wanted to play. In fact, I suited up. I want to say it was Dr. Kraft or Hansen was on the sidelines and my dad was in the stands, and it was a game time decision. I felt good and I wanted to play. But my dad pulled the plug on me last minute.
He took your helmet away, right? Hit it yeah. Under the bleachers.
Yeah, he did. And, so, you know, those are pretty rough moments for me watching the whole team go 14-0 and I didn't play a snap. And then then I ended up playing baseball. Baseball didn't test it as much as football did. That was really the thing that I was worried about. I was the left wing in Blankenship's in Blankenship's offense. And so most of the time I was running to the right side of the field, just the way that his offense was geared. And so I was always it was my left knee that I tore. So I was always planting on my right, which was the stable one. I felt really good about that. But anytime they split me out at receiver a lot, and you know, anytime I'm running back punts or kickoffs, and then, you know, anytime I had to cut on my left knee back towards the other way early on, it was a mental hurdle for sure.
Yeah.
And that took time.
But then your senior season of football was pretty much a dream, right? All the work that you put in, and probably a lot of blood, sweat, and tears as well. Some of those lonely moments that you had rehabbing that thing, and like you said, wanting to get in the game, and the disappointment of that, and then having to wait, you know, many more months to get back on the football field. But, you know, looking back at that senior year, you scored 44 touchdowns, NorCal Player of the Year. I remember the Cal High Sports magazine that had you on the cover, and it said Which Way McKay. They had you with a baseball bat and a football. I'm like, hey, that's our guy. That's our Fresno Clovis guy on the cover of a statewide high school magazine. How cool is this? So, you know, just when you look back at that season, you know, what are some of the main memories that pop out to you?
My senior year in football.
Yeah.
I remember Blankenship pulling me out way too early. That's what I remember. I remember we were blowing people out so bad that I'd be out in the third quarter. I'm like, hey, that's a little bit soon. No, some of the best memories that I have, I mean, Clovis High always was, right? And I have so much respect for Coach Simon, Cliff Wetzel, who, you know, passed away recently, mm-hmm. and who's are such a dear friend of mine, their family that I love. It just was, you know, that rivalry was unlike anything, maybe anything the Valley has experienced. I mean, our sophomore game, when we ended in a tie and the fans stormed the field and then started chanting, "Let's play ball." I mean, I can't think of another experience like that I've ever had. So those games were just different. And you always want to do special things in special games. And I remember, you know, the one time I went around the sidelines and leapt up over a couple guys and into the end zone, that felt really, really good. I can remember against Bakersfield in the Valley Championship, taking an option from Brad Martin around the right side and just tiptoeing down the sidelines into the end zone. That felt really good. It basically iced the game. And so, you know, it's those moments. Thankfully, I still have them memorialized on VHS.
Yeah.
So I can you can relive them every once in a while in like really, really low def settings. And so, but I would say those are the highlights. And then in baseball, you know, I had a 3 home run game and, had a couple really big games against Bullard, which they were always our rival. And unfortunately, we weren't able to make it to the Valley Championship in baseball. But that combined with just, you know, all of the friendships that you make, some of which I still hold on to. And I, you know, as you mentioned, got to really relive and have a reunion with those guys a couple years ago when the whole team was inducted. And it was really fun for me.
So speaking of having your games on VHS and you know, with the grainy footage with the lines across the screens.
Oh, yeah.
Do your sons and your, you know, your daughters as well, do they really know how good dad was? Like, do you sometimes bust open that VHS and pop that thing and show them, okay, this is what dad was really like?
You know, my kids, they're so cute. When they were young, they used to watch it and so, you know, they grew up watching that. They've been to the Hall of Fame induction and so I think that they have a healthy appreciation for how good I was and also how not good I was in a lot of ways. But you know, they listen to me. But Cole, for example, he plays wide receiver and he's 10 times the receiver I ever was, you know? And so there are things like, I was just, as a running back, you're trained differently. Like, you attack the game slightly different as a running back than you do as a receiver. And so, you know, there are things that I can help him with. different moves and spacing. And it's one of the things I felt like I was really, really good as. I could just feel people and space. And Cole has that same gift, but he just, there's very little that I can coach him on because he knows more than I do, frankly. He knows more about coverages, about reading coverages, about what to do, what to do. Well, he knows more than I do. So it's a little bit hard to coach him up.
Well, I just even going back and watching some of your old highlights in the last few days and forming some questions for you during this interview, just some of those moves that you made in football, just so graceful, and your instinct level, it was just off the chart. So, McKay Christensen, we're going to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about high school and then what went on with baseball and your career in baseball, and a little bit more about where you are out in life. When we come back on the Central Valley Sports Report, talking with McKay Christensen on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. Please come down here to First String Sports. First String Sports have been my sponsor since day one. They are awesome here, corner, or actually Blackstone. Blackstone in between Bullard and Herndon Avenues. This is definitely the place to be. Come and check out all the Lenderman's jackets and all the other cool stuff that they sell here. We just had a great segment with McKay Christensen. And, you know, when you say that name, McKay Christensen, it's just everyone's got a story about McKay, whether, you know, it was a game that they watched or you know, saw him inducted into Hall of Fames. And we know that a lot of boys right now in Clovis Unified are named McKay because a lot of his classmates are now have kids in high school and named McKay all over the Central section. So this has been a lot of fun. We got a lot more to talk about with McKay. So I have a story, a high school story about you. So in 94, I was actually, or 93, I was in college, going to Fresno Pacific College. And I'm like, I got to see McKay Christensen play football. So we went to, I don't think it was Ratcliffe. It might have been McLean Stadium. And you were playing McLean. And me and my buddy were watching you. And you returned a punt for a touchdown, pretty much untouched down the right sideline, scored a few more touchdowns. And me and my buddy were just amazed just at the, you know, just how smooth and easy football was for you in that game. And we're just commenting on that. And then I heard a voice, you know, a couple rows up say, he could have been my starting point guard for me in basketball this year too. And we look back and it was Coach Wahlberg. Just kind of like, I could have used him for basketball. And then that darn knee injury really derailed that. But anyway, you know, when you would score touchdowns and when you would have green grass ahead of you and you would juke a couple guys, what are the types of feelings that were going through your mind? Was it euphoria? Was it like, man, I'm helping my team win? You know, what through your mind when you score touchdowns?
Gosh, every time you take it's interesting because I probably should have entered my career with more goals in mind. I didn't have a single rushing and or TD goal before the season started. I just, every time I stepped on the field, I just wanted to score. That was my goal. Every time I got on the field, every time I touched the ball, I wanted to score. And so I was always looking for the right cutback, the right move. I tried to study, we didn't have film as much back then, but I tried to study in practice moves that I could make in certain space, what to do when I was pinned up against the sidelines, what to do when guys were in certain spacing. And so to me, the fun of it wasn't the sprint to the end zone. It was everything that happened before. And finding the right hole, learning how to explode through it, learning how to, you know, to make one cut and get downfield. Blankenship actually helped a lot with that. And so my favorite part was making people miss, was trying to, you know, I got more joy out of that than I almost did. I mean, nothing beats the feeling of entering the end zone, but it's how you get there, you know, that made it so much fun. And that's really what I focused on all the time.
Well, and then you were offered to play both football and baseball to BYU. So did Lavelle Edwards, did he personally talk to you, or what did that look like with Coach?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of interesting. Recruiting was a lot different back then. We got letters, right? And we didn't end up talking to coaches initially. It seems like a lot of it may have been even filtered through our coaches. And I would just get letters in the mail from Stanford or Cal or USC or UCLA. And then the coaches would start to reach out to blank, and then eventually they would end up getting my dad's phone number initially. And then you would kind of narrow the field to the teams that you were interested in, and if you were, the communications would go longer, and then the coaches would end up, you know, coming to your house, and you'd go to their school and make visits and that kind of thing. And with BYU, Lavelle came to our home, and you know, I went on. That was one of the recruiting trips that I took, and that was ultimately the decision that I made. You know, I don't know if it would have been the best one or not, but that was the one that I made. It was a good experience for me. I enjoyed it.
And so your senior year rolls around for baseball. Obviously, you had a phenomenal football season, but then baseball, your stock just starts to rise. You hit 500. You have that incredible 62-for-62 stolen base attempts record. Scary good defense. I did hear one thing that some coach said, they could have put a McKay Christensen in right center, a McKay Christensen in left center, and it would have covered the baseball outfield better than any three outfielders up and down the state. So I thought that was a great description of your baseball skills. Yeah, scouts are raving, but you're committed. You are absolutely committed to your two-year mission after high school. And you send a letter out to all major league teams to say, hey, if you draft me, I am 100% committed to my mission. And then the Angels come in and select you number six. They don't care. They're like, we want our guy. I mean, just talk us through that situation, or walk us through that situation. You know, were you surprised, happy, concerned, all the above?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how I came to that starts. Well, what we talked about before with my knee injury, when I tore my ACL, I was pretty devastated. It was right after my sophomore season. I was getting a lot of looks in football and baseball. And actually, I never really thought about professional baseball. It wasn't even on my radar. It was just, I'm going to college, I'm playing football and baseball. And football was really the sport that I loved. And I loved baseball too. It just was a different thing for me. And so when I tore my ACL, I viewed it like, that opportunity was gone. And Dr. Hansen was pretty, and Kraft were pretty honest about, you know, we're talking 30 years ago now, right? Like what surgery was like, and people recovered from those injuries, but it was still pretty new. And so I thought, I thought I may have lost an opportunity. So at the time, I grew up in a very religious family where faith in God and miracles were real, and I believed that if I worked my tail off and I did everything that I was supposed to, that the Lord could help and bless me to be healed. And so I, you know, at the time I in my own kind of 16-year-old way promised that if my knee got better enough, I was strong enough to play, that I would serve a mission. And it was my way of saying that I would give back and be obedient and do the things that I felt like he expected of me to do. And so I made a promise when I was 16, when I was a sophomore. And then when I was, you know, after that, like we talked about, I rehabbed and I worked my absolute tail off to get well. And then my senior year, I accomplished more than I ever set out to do. I didn't even really consider being drafted, not really until I was started to become real when I was a junior, and then it became really real my senior year. And so then when the opportunity was presented to me and they said, McKay, you're either going to go in the top five picks in the draft, or if you serve a mission, we're not going to draft you at all. It just brought into remembrance the promise that I made when I was 16 years old. And in my young mind, the Lord certainly delivered on everything that I needed him to do. And I felt like it was time for me to deliver on what I had promised to do. And so I said, well, I appreciate it, but you know, I'm going to serve a mission. And to my astonishment, the teams for about a week or two, it got really quiet. I didn't hear from people after that. And mm-hmm. then all the scouts kept showing up at my games and I started getting phone calls. The field of teams that were interested narrowed. I dropped from what I thought would have been higher down to six. And I got paid less money. I got paid as though I was maybe a top 15 to 20 pick rather than a top six pick, I think is what it was, maybe a top 10 pick or something like that. But it was remarkable to me. it was, you know, I just didn't anticipate them, the Angels, coming back and saying, well, you can serve a mission and we'll still draft you. And that's what happened. So, yes, all of those adjectives, astonished, surprised, happy, all of those.
Oh, yeah, that it's such an amazing story. And so you serve your mission, and I believe it was in Tokyo, right? Were you 2 years in Tokyo?
Uh-huh, yep.
So 2 years, and then in between that, you got traded, huh? Wow, the business of baseball. So you get traded to the White Sox, and you finally make it up to the majors in 1999. Do you remember, like, what stands out to you? You being called up to the majors, the locker room, putting your jersey on, playing catch, getting your first hit. What, I mean, oh, I'm sure yeah. all of those are still at the forefront of your mind.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk hours about all of that stuff, but I mean, it was remarkable to me to come home from, you know, I lost probably 15 pounds. I came home weighing about 160 pounds, 165 pounds. And I, you know, walked into a locker room full of guys that I was collecting baseball cards of, you know, Frank Thomas, yeah. Albert Bell, and Ray Durham, and all of these guys that I, you know, a lot of them that I grew up watching on television. And now I'm a peer, and not only a peer, but I'm expected to, you know, make the team. And well, not when I first showed up. And then when I got there, I have a handful of hilarious stories about, you know, the experiences that I had when I was first there, and how green I was and how unprepared I was. But and how long it took me to get back into shape. I mean, I hear ESPN announcers constantly talking about how BYU has an age advantage, and they, you know, don't ever really take into account the fact that you are both mentally and physically not a waste of space, but you come back with a lot of ground to recover from.
Yeah.
And it takes an insane amount of work to get back. And so, but anyway, yeah, I came back and that was, it was a remarkable experience to play. And I was just fortunate to be able to spend the amount of time that I did playing.
We're talking with McKay Christensen. So now you're in the major leagues. Yeah. Like you said, you're watching Frank Thomas take BP, and you're looking how big Albert Bell is, and you know, the hands and left-handed bat of Ray Durham and all that fun stuff. And so, you know, you got a couple major league home runs. Do you remember who you hit those off of?
I know I hit one off Weaver. I get reminded of that all the time. And one off Jeff, and I can't even remember who I hit the other one off of.
Were you able to get the ball, retrieve the ball, or at least your first hit?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course. I've got my first hit was off Jose Mesa. We played Seattle. I didn't even really belong in the major leagues when I first got called. I got called up a year and a half off my mission. I could, you know, I got my speed back, and I could fly, and I could track down fly balls in the outfield. I could steal bags. Hitting, I wasn't ready yet, and so I was used a lot as a defensive replacement, as a base stealer, and that sort of thing. But my first hit was off Jose Mesa. I've got that ball. I've got my home run ball. Yep, they're still around here somewhere collecting dust, I'm sure.
Oh, around here somewhere. So is it thrown into a box of memorabilia, just sitting there, right? At least it's probably marked, right? First major league hit, and it has the date,
sure.
Right? Okay.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, that's all the best, you know, they make it look as awful as they possibly can. So it, you know, it looks like,
was it
a terrible Sharpie to it?
Yeah. Was it, Jose Mesa? And I mean, Weaver had that slider thing that he threw half the time, and it's coming into you as a lefty. And, you know, Jose Mesa had that slider too. Were they both sliders or were they fastballs?
No, I think both of them were fastballs. Actually.
Oh, wow. All right. Turned on them.
Yeah. No, I didn't have problems with fastballs. It was probably the slider or the changeup that was always around.
Were there? Okay, so 2002 rolls around, and you make it. You find your way with the Los Angeles Dodgers, my team, and spring training. The story goes that it was a competition for the center fielder job between you, Tom Goodwin, another local legend, Marquise Grissom, and some guy by the name of Dave Roberts. For the center fielder job. Dave Roberts won that job. Come on, Dave, what's up with that? What do you remember about that?
You know what? I just came in unprepared, to be honest. I mean, I spent part of it, it's product of my own failures. I'd spend every off season in Utah. I never got it. I just didn't get outside enough to hit enough. I didn't get in a warm weather. I had no business basically spending my off season in Utah is the best way to sum it up. And so every time I showed up in spring training, I had a lot of catching up to do. And I also, I loved the game. I loved the game of baseball, but I didn't love it like I loved football.
Yeah.
And I didn't love it. I didn't love it the way you have to love it. I mean, I couldn't do what Dave is doing. I love, like, what Dave is doing with the Dodgers is phenomenal. And there's, and some people are cut that way. They just, they eat, drink, live, and sleep the game. I never did. And so, you know, I didn't spend, you know, I played in the Arizona Fall League two years, but the right after that season, the previous season that I had with the Dodgers, I think I hit 326. I tore it up. They wanted me to go to Mexico and play winter ball. My body was beat up, and I was like, you know, I'm not doing it. I'm going home, and I'm spending time with my family, and I need a break. And I shouldn't have done that. And in hindsight, there are things like that that it's where my little boy is built a little bit differently than me. My boy would have been like, I'm there. What do you need me to do?
Yeah.
I'm there. and so I you know, that it was my fault not coming in prepared, but Dave was a great baseball player, and he was more of a utility guy than I was. You know, he could play another play other positions, and he's taken that experience, and he's turned it into an incredible career. And now you get to watch him on TV win World Series. How about that?
Well, guarantee World Series at least, right? Guarantee him. Yeah, were you faster than Dave Roberts? So can you at least claim that? I'm going to say yes. I might speak for you. No?
Come now.
What? Of course.
Of course.
Of course. Even though he had one of the most famous stolen bases in Major League history for the Boston Red Sox, right? Of course, McKay Christensen would have smoked him.
That's right.
All right. I like that answer.
Dave was quick, but I've got him.
You got him. All right. So 2004 rolls around, and you were in the Cincinnati Reds organization with the AAA. And, you know, there's an article out there, I think, in the Desert Times, and you basically said, I'm done. It was early, early in the season. And you went in the manager's office and said, you know, this is the end of the line for me. So, you know, what went into that decision? You know, how do you look on it now? Obviously, you have a phenomenal life right now. But when you look up at that decision that you made, how do you frame it?
You know, hindsight's always 20/20. But it was premature. I was 27 when I retired. I had still a long career ahead of me, but I was stealing third. I came into third, and a third baseman came down on my shoulder, and I tore my rotator cuff the year that I was with the Mets. And my shoulder never recovered from that. In fact, I went in to see the doctor about a month ago, and he told me I need a total shoulder replacement, which has not been happy news. But I had a hard time recovering from that. My arm was never quite the same after that. But, and so I look back, but I do look back and I say, man, it was early. And my agent was like, Mac, what are you doing? And like, you were just like, you're at the top of your game. I was hitting well. I'd kind of, you know, after losing 2 years to my mission, really it's 3 years, because it took me a solid year just to even get back into shape. I needed like a red shirt year in pro ball. but, you know, I was 27 years old and still had a lot of, I guess, life in front of me in terms of my career, but I was ready to move on. I come from a family of real estate developers. My family had just acquired a large master plan community in Utah. I had my first daughter, and my first child was my daughter. And it's like I said earlier, it just was never, I realized in order for me to, you know, I grew up and I was playing in a steroid era, but I knew that in order for me to be the type of player that I needed to be, I had to give more than I was giving. And I just got to a place where I'm like, I want to make a career in something different. I want to start a career in something different than what I was doing. And it was a tough decision, but I don't look back and regret it.
And pro ball is so different, right? I have a few friends that have played professional baseball in the minors, and it's not glamorous, right? It's right. I mean, you gotta love the game. You have to have, you have to have a certain goal. You have to grind through tons of situation. But you know, for the average fan out there, what is something that the average fan doesn't know about pro baseball or something that would surprise the average fan about being a professional baseball player?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, it's you can understand things cognitively, but until you understand them experientially, it's hard to really appreciate the grind of baseball. You know, at the major league level, it is different. You're getting a day off probably every week, maybe every 10 days. That is huge. 162 games, plus you've got, you know, 45, 60 days of spring training, plus you've got winter ball or off-season ball. That's why, I mean, some guys, some seasons, you've got maybe 30 days off to recover, you know, as you're trying to make it through the system. And you know, but in the minor leagues, you get one day off a month. And roughly, and you are finishing games at 11, you know, 10:30 at night. By the time you shower and get out, it's close to midnight. You're on a bus, a 10-hour bus ride to the next place. You roll in at close to, you know, 10 in the morning. You're exhausted. You get a couple hours of sleep and you're on the field. I mean, it's a straight up the minor leagues is a straight up grind. And that's why I say you have to eat, sleep, and drink it. You have to believe there's no other future in your life than that. Mm-hmm. You got all in and bought into that. And if you're not willing to go through that, it's going to be painful. And you know, but the upside is you have the boys, you've got the clubhouse, you've got the camaraderie, you have the game itself, which you love. But you know, I guess maybe I'll end by saying it's a wonderful. Baseball is an incredible metaphor for life, right? Because you especially professionally, you just learn how to deal with 0-for-5s, 0-for-4, yeah. 0-for-3, 2-for-4, 3-for-4, 2-for-3, you know, and you just, and it keeps you pretty even keel over the course of 162 games. But
yeah, that's it is, you really have to love the game and have that goal in mind. And McKay, we got a few minutes here, and I definitely want to wrap this up about you know, just asking you where you're at in life now. You mentioned Utah and how much you've poured into your family and your sons right now, but at this stage in life, you know, I'm past 50 already, and you're getting up there. You know, you're not that far behind me, but at this stage, I know, in this stage in your life, you know, what gives you the most joy right now?
I was just married about 8 months ago, and my wife is as good as life, as she makes life as good as life could possibly be. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that my children are, all things considered, they're happy and healthy and safe. And I've got a wonderful family. My family is just about everything to me. And I've got good friends, dear friends that are close to me. Work has been fortunate over the last, I would say, since 2008 to be in a good real estate market. I'm a real estate developer, and we've had a nice little run-up over the past decade and a half. I'd love to see interest rates go back down to where they were about 8 months ago. And some other things change, but all things considered, we're really happy. When life is happy, when family is happy, I guess when family is happy, life is happy. And that's where I find my joy. So
that's excellent. And the people that you do hang around with, they ask you a lot of questions about your athletic accomplishments and what it was like, or are they just more like, no, you're my friend, you're my dad, you know, you're work people. Is that what it's like?
I don't know that anybody remembers and or cares about me anymore, Paul, except for maybe a handful of people in Clovis. I don't know. Occasionally I'll still get some fan mail from random fans, you know, around the country. And there are people that, you know who I am here and know my name from years, you know, decades ago. But most of the people that I know me probably through real estate than they ever do through anything else. And so not a ton.
Yeah. And, but you are well loved here and well respected, and your accomplishments are many and vast, but you know, just as much as people talk about you as McKay Christensen, the athlete, they talk you more about McKay Christensen, the friend and respectable young man, and just the the amount of humbleness and love that you bring about in the best of everybody. So this has been an amazing conversation, just absolutely flew by. And I, you know, from my end, I'm very honored to talk to you. And, you know, I remember you, even though I'm a few years older than you, I remember you reading about you in the newspapers. And, you know, they say don't meet those guys that you read about in newspapers or see on TV because you might be disappointed, but certainly not for me. You are a class individual, and it was a pleasure to talk to you, McKay.
Thank you so much, Paul. Please send my love to all the people back in Fresno and those who are listening. I couldn't be more grateful for the life that I had growing up there. It's one of the most magical places I could have ever, you know, grown up in. And when I come back into town, we'll go hit up the doghouse and have a tri-tip sandwich.
Absolutely, 100%. I will take you up on that deal. All right, McKay Christensen, hey, Clovis West, just a great interview. Thank you and appreciate you taking the time to talk.
Always. Thanks, brother.
All right, thanks. On 1430 ESPN, when we come back, we're going to wrap everything up. This has been the Central Valley Sports Report with Paul Metters on 1430 ESPN.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
What a great show we had today here at First String Sports. Thank you to First String Sports for sponsoring the show. Thanks to Gabe Camarilla, Jorge Rodriguez, Trace Jackson, our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week. And of course, McKay Christensen. What a wonderful interview we had with him. McKay is an awesome guy and obviously a phenomenal athlete as well. If you missed any part of the show, you could go to the 1430 ESPN website, download, listen at your leisure. We will see you guys next week. Have a good week and talk to you soon.